faced with more and more pressure to produce great healthcare at lower costs, we see lots of professionals burning out at alarming rates. Of course, the healthcare industry isn't the only one to experience this. We see it in caregivers, in education, and anybody that is in a higher executive leadership position, although we don't talk about it like it applies to us. Well, today, Dr. Claire Bourne and I, Stress-Free MD, we discuss emotional exhaustion at work, and not only like tricks and tips to like help it, but like just to be honest and vulnerable about how it applies to us and what we can do as a community and as a culture to turn this conversation around towards the health that we're actually attempting to influence in our own population. It's a great conversation. I am lucky and honored that we were introduced, and I know that you'll find some nuggets in listening as well.
Welcome to the Executive Shaman Podcast, where Dr. Crystal White and her comrades guide us to bring more wholeness, energy, and connectivity to our professions. We're ready, Crystal. Get us started.
Yay! I like starting with like high energy, a yay, because sometimes like the hardest thing about being a leader and a high performing individual is just finding the time to schedule connections with other people that fuel you. So yay yes. for us for making it work.
I know, right? Pat on the back.
Totally. And across time zones and different appointments and when we schedule. So I think it's absolutely fueling to say yay together. Yes. So welcome, Dr. Myesha. Tell me what you really do for a living.
What I really do, it's kind of a loaded question actually, but what I really do is I help other doctors. I have a 4-year-old son, and I tell my son, I'm the doctor that helps other doctors. And in a couple of different domains, in one domain, it's helping physicians to, and other medical professionals, particularly moms in medicine and women in medicine, to reclaim their time, to reclaim their freedom, to reclaim their autonomy so that they can actually have a life that they love, that's on their terms, and a career in the field using the expertise that we spend so much money to get, and love that career and feel like they're making a difference. So that's what I really do. I call myself a, sort of the healer of healers.
I love this. Healing is such a big verb right now in the industry too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't believe how many different people are calling themselves healers, where we would never use that word 5 years ago, 10 years ago, coming into the medical field.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, it's such a nice, refreshing change to like have doctors begin to recognize themselves as more than just the clinician. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with the clinician, but we are so much more than that. Mm-hmm. We're creatives, we're healers, we're moms, we're, you know, we wear so many hats. We're
caretakers,
we have fun.
Yeah,
we're,
you're exactly. problem solvers. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this. And tell me why you said yes to this podcast.
Well, why I really said yes. So there were two reasons. One, a former, you know, guest who happened to be a former med school mate of mine, Dr. Kevin Buford, KB the Imperfect, hooked us up. Mm-hmm. But then when I talked to you and I got your commitment to just to expansion and healing and your energy, that's what drew me into the podcast.
Oh, thank you for that. I love that you just gave the backstory too, because that is how real world leadership works. Mm-hmm. We say yes because somebody else influences us to show up or to kind of check something out. Like that's how we go to yoga, or that's how like I got into this profession to begin with, is somebody said, hey, you really need to check this out. And then somebody else said, hey, you really need to do this. And then, you know, like with KB, he's like, hey, you need to meet my lady, my girl. And you guys would have a synergistic relationship. And he was spot on. And I think that there's a healing part of how we, you know, bring other people together as well. And that is absolutely critical for what we're going to talk about today, is you call yourself the Stress-Free MD, and we're talking about emotional exhaustion today. And really, I would like to start off just asking, like, what does that mean to you, being stress-free and preventing emotional exhaustion?
Yeah, well, so, you know, when I, and I'm stress-free MD, but also stress-free mom MD. Some people may know me as a stress-free mom MD. You know, for me, it's not, people always say, well, are you really stress-free? And there's a need for some stress in our lives. So it's not about being stress-free. It's about how we create workability in our lives, because we are such givers. As women, as moms, as medical professionals, we're givers. That's like our default. I think it's like a requirement that you have to be a giver in order to go into any type of healing profession. And it's an unspoken requirement. And so what happens is, when we give and give and give and give, and we do not take time to fill our own tanks, to fill our own buckets, then we get exhausted. And it's not like there is a physical component, but it's mostly the physical component comes from the emotional component.
Yeah.
And so, and that emotional exhaustion can come from anything. It could come from the work that we do, like as a physician, I could speak to the work that we do seeing, you know, 20 to 25 patients going room after room and having to engage for that much, and give your all with each patient, because, you know, we care as physicians.
Or absolutely.
And then it could be, you know, we turn around and come home and then we want to give to our families. You know, when I come home, it is all about my boy, and it's me and my boy. I'm a single mom, so it's me and my boy. It's like the phone goes down and it's dedication to him until bedtime. And that can really, if we don't take time on a daily basis to refill that cup emotionally and spiritually and physically, it can drain us and lead to that emotional exhaustion.
Yeah. You know, I work, or in the past, I've worked with mostly military leaders as well. And I find that nurses and docs are representative often of selfless leaders. Like, there are many male leaders out there too, who are just giving, giving, giving. And then because of a good intention to be the type of man that also, like, gives back to his family, goes home, and then gives and gives and gives and gives. Mm-hmm. And in the last, like, 10 years, I've seen, like, a hidden component of male leadership psychology is that they feel just as guilty as women do for taking time out for themselves. Huh. And except there's not a validation or a social convention with talking about it, you know? And so there's more, in my experience, there's more forums for women who are, especially working women and have families to talk about this issue. And I don't know if there's such a platform for men as much as there is for women.
Well, you know, there actually are a few platforms. So on Facebook particularly, there's a group that's quite popular among moms. It's called PMG, the Physician Mom Group. And there's actually a physician dads group. Now, I don't know if there is as many, you know, doc dads or medical dads. And I don't know what other forms there are for dads. But it's such a good point. Like, there are so many more forms for women. I think women are more likely to connect and reach out and talk. And then there's, you know, there's the maybe a stigma for men that has them not be as expressive about it, or maybe the approach is a little different. But I've always been had an interest to be an advocate for men, and I, as a woman, don't know how to do that. So it's so great that you bring that to the forefront, because it really is important for us to realize that even though a lot of the forms are out there for women, men have just as much guilt. They have just as much struggle in taking time for themselves and trying to split that and be committed to being a good provider, being a good, you know,
a good worker.
Provider on all fronts, you know, and then being a dad and being, you know, there's a lot of hats there too. I think that, you know, if I were to encourage the male audience today, it would be, you know, we can't heal what we don't know is wrong. So, like, that we need to, and then as a community, we need to start to shift the context of the stigma of men being expressive and make it safe for men to be just as expressive as women.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do think that women just, well, there's research showing that women have more connective tissues between both sides of their brains. And of course, they have like more of social convention and also training, and then also a biological propensity for verbal expression. And I think what happens oftentimes is that this emotional exhaustion point, like there is something about being a female and raising children, and that where it's recognized that you're going to burn out, you're at risk for burning out, and especially just having a child in general requires a lot of energy. And there are signs in nature that indicate that. There are signs of our in our communities that indicate that. And I think that we do this social comparison between men and women, and men try to compensate for that, and they do it silently. And this, the triad of burnout, which is in my model I use, is like depersonalization, emotional exhaustion, and lack of achievement. The one, is that accurate? Is that what you follow still? Yeah. The emotional exhaustion one is often the one that is really silent. And because you can see if you're not achieving well, and you can feel so intensely if you don't feel like you're really known. But this emotional exhaustion, I think a lot of people hit it and they just keep on going, going, going. And it's not till well after their tank is empty that they're like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like beyond the reserve tank by the time they realize it. And I think part of that is that, you know, it's like we have a high tolerance for stress. We have a high tolerance for pain and a high tolerance for stress. And so the emotional exhaustion, at least in my experience and what I've heard, is that it's a little bit insidious. It doesn't, it's not like it hits you like a truck. It just eats away at you, a little at a time. And then one day you wake up and you're like, what the?
Yeah.
You know?
What am I doing here? And then you begin to question everything.
Exactly. And when one hits you, it's like they all become apparent.
Yeah.
And in my experience, it's like once you become present to the unworkability of your life, then it becomes very loud. And that actually feeds back into the exhaustion, because if you don't have a structure or some type of plan or strategy or accountability or connection to help you to shift what you're doing so that you can fill that tank and you can like reclaim your life, then it's just more worry and how do I get out and more
isolation.
Is right.
More exactly. Failure, which more burns, which more exhausts you. You know, the fascinating thing is they've done studies about that front part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, the PFC, which is the most involved in logical decisions of what you should do when you want to do something different, right?
Yeah.
That part of the brain is like, oh, I want to do this, but I need to do that because it's the good thing for me. When you're exhausted physically, when you're exhausted emotionally or spiritually or even relationally, because I got to just out myself that sometimes I can be exhausting at a relational level. Then that PFC, that part of your brain, just shuts down. Like there's no more juice there. There's no more gas, and it channels and shuffles all the blood glucose oxygenation to other parts of your brains that are more protective and more automatic and are more biologically necessary. And so you have something to say, I'm sure, about that.
Well, it's literally, I mean, all I was thinking was it's literally like your body literally goes into survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, it sounds like what you're describing is like, you know, literally your body goes into survival mode. And that's, and when you're in survival mode, there's all possibility is shut off.
Right. All hope, all goodness. And then you're healing other people from that position. You're leading, and, or as a doctor, you're trying to take care and fix or heal or prevent something in your patients. And it's just like this sense of objectification of our leaders, whether you're a physician leader or you're, you know, in a different industry. And I find that the most important population that is going through this right now are straddle leaders. And those are the ones that are in management positions and in patient care positions or in client service positions, right? They're doing both at one time. So can you speak to something about a discipline or a strategy that people can learn if they're in that position right now of being a straddle leader that can help them prevent emotional exhaustion?
So one of the things that I often have my people do is to begin to really look at what's important to them. And because one of the things that we as leaders do, especially those, you know, those who are service providers, you know, who are in service and in contribution, tend to automatically put ourselves on the back burner. And so we do it, we become practiced at it, becomes habitual, and then we lose ourselves and what's important to us. Mm-hmm. And so in order to get back to creating, you know, workability, you first have to recognize, well, what are your true values? What is important to you? And then what are you doing? What are your priorities? Like, what are you prioritizing versus what's actually important to you? Mm-hmm. And when I do this exercise, usually in group, whenever I speak with doctors, whenever I speak with medical students, whenever I speak with healthcare professionals, I do this exercise and it becomes very loud. Like, I am, my value, what's important to me is this, and what I'm prioritizing is this. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you drop everything that you're prioritizing, but how do, then you start to look at, well, how can you begin to create a win-win where you get what is priority done, like what needs to get done gets done, and what's important to you also gets fulfilled. And oftentimes I find that people in leadership positions have that I can do it all by myself personality. And I think that we've got to begin to remember that, you know, community is where people thrive the most. And so, you know, beginning to look at, well, who can in my life can I enroll in supporting me in having what I value and what is priority or what needs to get done from a logistical level? Who can I have in my community support me in getting that done, whether it's family, whether you need to have a conversation with colleagues or a boss? And it just depends on what it is that shows up. But trying to do it in isolation without any feedback, that's where people get into that loop, into that hamster wheel, and they feel like they're doing more, but they're not going anywhere.
Right. I think that so many people are exhausted because they're living bifurcated existence, right? They are doing one thing and seeing all these patients and giving, and then also don't feel like they're actually achieving what they really set out when they first went into medicine or went into leadership or went into a service industry. And I think that's important to like just come out of denial and be like, I am not satisfied with where I'm at. That doesn't mean you need to leave where you're at. Just as like, if you're in a relationship and you're not satisfied with that relationship, doesn't mean that the relationship is not possibly future satisfiable. It's that now you're being asked to change something. And I absolutely think that multiple industries, especially as like physician leaders or care nurse leaders, or like in my experience, like service leaders, if you were asked to perform a procedure that you had never been trained in, or you didn't feel competent or secure in, you would never do it. But now so many people are asked to lead or to manage or to do this new software or to do this new program, and they're just going to and saying yes to it without saying, okay, yes, when you train me, I will, and when I'm developed to, then I will do this. But I find so many leaders get at middle age or, you know, 35 and above that just aren't saying, hey, I'm in an unfair, exhausting position when you request me to do something that I'm not ready for.
Yeah. And I think one thing that people don't realize is, you know, most companies that are hire, you know, who are putting people in leadership positions have a budget for leadership training and development. And we're just not asking for it.
So, you know, so I absolutely believe this. I believe I'm a leadership developer. I have like individual coaching programs and team coaching programs, and people are like, I can't afford it. And I was like, this is not just about you. Like, ask for, hey, this is what I would like. This is how much it costs. What do you think about it? At least you start the conversation that you are worth developing. And you, the leadership actually believes in this as well. It's just people are not asking for it with a level of passion and confidence that is, you know, necessary for them to get what is helpful to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when do we have to speak up? There's some place for personal responsibility in, you know, knowing number one, that there is a budget. So that's one thing, but then like being willing to ask. I find that, you know, a lot of the people, a lot of the service providers and healthcare professionals and docs that I talk to are afraid to ask. But then, you know, there's the piece where the culture of medicine makes it wrong to ask.
Yeah,
we
absolutely
are conditioned to be afraid to ask, because when we have asked questions in our training, we have been ridiculed or down-talked or condescended upon. And so it just, you know, we don't even think to ask. It's like, nope, I should be able to handle it. Or I'm going to look weak if I ask for help, or I'm going to look this and that. But like I said, these organizations typically have a budget for leadership, and there is nothing wrong with asking to be trained so that you can be a more effective leader. And then framing it linguistically in a way where it's a win-win for the company. Like, look, you know, I'm in this exhausting position and I want to be as effective of a leader as I can for the benefit of the company. I know that you have a budget for this. How can we work together so that I can get trained in leadership?
Yeah, like, I had such an awesome experience with a leader who asked for just the time and the budget for development of himself and his highest enlisted aide and all the med techs. And it was something that was so powerful, because first, role modeling what a surgeon, you know, the surgeon comes with automatic like position of leadership in terms of authority and intelligence and acumen. And when he went to this person and said, hey, I need training in this, and I would like my, you know, highest enlisted person to get trained in it, and then I would like 80% of the medics and techs in the next year to be trained in this fundamental aspect of it. It was transformative for this leader and for his whole team. And I will always just care for this leader by standing up and asking for it.
Yeah. And then by the leader standing up and asking, especially asking for the people that he's leading and managing, like this applies in the medical field as well. You, when you step up your leadership and you're willing to ask for what you need and also for what the people you're managing needs, you actually can impact them positively as well.
Yeah. And awesome thing for this was that it was said yes to right away on the spot, and then it was delivered. Now, in other situations, I know that it's like, well, maybe no, and the person needs to be very persistent, which if you're emotionally exhausted, again, you don't have a level of grit and persistence. So my thing of like highly resilient people who are emotionally exhausted, if you find yourself listening and you're like, gosh, I'm just emotionally exhausted, just know that you might ask and it might be said no. And that's the time to ask somebody else on your behalf. Like, hey, I asked for this. Where are some other resources that might say yes? Or how should I handle this? What are some creative solutions that I'm not thinking about right now? It's not to take no for an answer and to ask for, you know, relational support when that does occur, because that's just a huge blow if you're already exhausted.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we have to take matters into our own hands. I mean, if the organization says no, that doesn't mean you can't go out and find someone who can support you outside of the organization. And there are different ways to do that. I mean, you can go out and hire yourself a coach like, you know, myself or like Crystal. Or you can, and you can do that and you can request reimbursement. So a lot of my docs, you know, they have hospitals that may have budgets for in some type of development around physician wellness. They may have a physician burnout task force. They may have, health and wellness directors inside of organizations. A lot of corporations in general are beginning to adopt these principles too, like corporate wellness. So even if you're not inside the medical industry, there's a rise in awareness around burnout and all that it is and all and the cost to that. And so you could easily, you know, go out and find a coach or a program or a speaker even that you want to suggest to your organization and take matters into your own hands. And then you can either request reimbursement or you could pay outright. And when they see the results, then you circle back and ask again, just like Crystal, you're saying, you know?
Yeah. What's one other piece of advice that you have? Like the last thing that you just encourage listeners out there, if they're at a point of emotional exhaustion or they see somebody else that might be as well?
I think the most important thing that I want people to take away is that they're not alone. I think that when you're in a space like that, and Crystal, I've been in that space.
I've Amen.
Been in
space Me a too, sister. Times.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a dark place to be in. And, you know, I think one of the things that drives me in what I do is having been in that place on the edge of life where you really see no other way out. And, you know, by the grace of God, I am here. Like, I had enough pause to not take those pills and end my life. And I have people who I went to school with who didn't have that pause.
Right.
And the statistic in our industry is that 300 to 400 doctors kill themselves a year.
Right.
So it's imperative that we know that we're not alone, whether you're in the medical industry or not. Lawyers has got a high suicide rate, you know, like this. I know pastors, I know, you know, like.
Yeah, military members.
Military members.
Selfless servants out there.
So it's like you're not alone. And for those who are experiencing emotional exhaustion, reach out, tell someone, even if it's not inside your organization, but it's a colleague that's outside of your organization. Seek assistance. And then for those of you who notice, you know, sometimes we notice, but we're afraid to say something. You never know whose life you're going to save by asking, are you okay, really?
Like really is the important word. Yep.
Yeah. Like, really, are you okay? And making a safe space for people to be to talk to you. And right. I think some people are afraid, like, oh, well, I'm exhausted too. I don't want to get sucked in. And, you know, it's the difference between life and death sometimes.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. You know, one of the decision points of my life when I was at Harvard and I was in my master's program is that I decided to be a counselor for the suicide hotline for all of the graduate schools and medicine program, you know, medical school. And I cannot tell you how many times on the one time a week I would be there is that people just wanted to talk to another human being about how hard the journey is. And the journey never ends until the day we leave this planet. Like, the journey is still going on, and it's still going on right this minute with anybody that's still listening. It's going on with me and you. And I just honor that journey. And we all make a difference, every single human being that you have interaction with today, tomorrow, and hopefully in the years to come. They want to be heard, and you want to be heard, and we need to really slow down and ask somebody, how are you really? What is going on really? And that, I find, puts energy into people who are far far beyond empty. So thanks for filling me up today. Just knowing that there are people out there matters to me, and I appreciate you. Tell people where they can find you if they're interested.
Yes. And thank you. First of all, just thank you, Crystal, for reaching out when KB, the imperfect, when he connected us and being willing to have me here and have my voice be heard. I really appreciate you. I appreciate what you do and who you are. Your listeners and for the community, for the world. So thank you for being that person, for being that healer, and
thank
for
you.
You know, all that you contribute in that way, for your commitment. Mm-hmm. And where people can find me for coaching, you want to go to stressfreemommd.com. That's stressfreemommd.com. And if you're in an organization and you are thinking that you want to hear me come speak about wellness, burnout, leadership, any of those things, then you can go to drmaisha.com to see my list of topics. That's DrMaisha, drmaisha.com.
Thank you so much for your presence with me today, and I am excited to see and talk to you soon, lady.
Woohoo!
Bye now.
Bye.